Special treat today for the first time in the entire podcast history, which is all of four episodes. We have our guest of honor, the first, Seth Coffing, my first baseball coach, good friend, lover of sports as well. So sit back. We're going to give you a look into our relationship, a little bit of his view on sports, and we're just happy to have a guest on, and hopefully we get a lot out of this. So sit back. Here we go.
Okay. So we're officially going live now. So you are welcome on to the first guest for the podcast. That's not Rob. So Rob's pretty much a mainstay. So for the folks listening, because they will be able to see us here, this is Seth Coffing, my first baseball coach. You want to introduce yourself a little bit, kind of a background, who you are a little bit?
Yeah. Thanks for having me, first of all. You said first baseball coach. I think I coached you in JV football as well.
You were a little before my time.
No, not at all. I was thinking
little before my time.
About this earlier.
Now, see, this is a bad thing because I wouldn't have been a notable enough football player then for you to know for sure. So
well,
I mean,
it was JV football, so it was a while ago. But no, as you know, I was teaching and coaching up at Alcona from basically 2006 to 2013. And that was my first full-time teaching position. I graduated from college in 03 and I was a long-term sub for about a year and a half at a school called Plainwell in, just north of Kalamazoo. And then I took that position in Alcona. So, that's how we know each other, obviously, but you know, I've been on several places since then.
Yeah. You're a well-traveled dude. I mean, between your coaching gigs, your teaching gigs, you obviously a variety of places. So you went from Kalamazoo, a little bit more urban, and now you had the hustling, bustling population of maybe 20 in Alcona. So
that's
you've
pushing
got, yeah, definitely pushing it. But you've got, you know, I'd like to think that it keeps you well-rounded as a, you know, teacher, as a coach. You know, you see a lot of different folks and a lot of different people, you know, so definitely varying who you get. So that's a cool thing, though, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's one of the things that obviously I can sell when I do interview places is I've been a lot of different places, diverse types of populations, types of young people and peers and things like that. You know, I grew up in a small town, not a whole lot different than Alcona, maybe a little bit faster than Alcona, but it wasn't a whole lot, you know, Quincy, Michigan, not known for a whole lot other than, you know, there's an antique town down the way about 5 miles and when everybody asks you where you're from, you have to say Coldwater or an hour south of Lansing because nobody knows where Quincy's at. So,
yeah, much the same up with home here. I mean, Alpena, you say Alpena and people say, oh, okay, so you're tucked away over there. So,
or you got to show them your mitten and then show them where.
Right. Yeah. Point along the hand there. So you and I, we've got this history. You're an educator. If I didn't know you from coaching, I knew you from teaching. We actually have a few accolades. We got a few trophies together even. So, you know, we racked up a couple district championships together. We got two together. And then I captured another one later on when you'd moved on in time and stuff. So that's pretty cool. That's our connection in terms of we've grown together. We spent a lot of time. We actually ended up playing a little bit together with men's league later on. We've done that as well. You and I thought, might end up doing something like this along just based off the fact that we'd have 9 hour rides to tournaments together. We'd be talking shop like this already.
Yeah. Back in the day, if this technology was there, we probably would have anyways. But you know, this is a pretty cool, you know, thing that we have now that we can do this from God knows how, was it 12 hours away from each other right now, something like that. So, you know, I'm in Frederick, Maryland, which I know is about 8 hours from Detroit. So,
yeah, so that's a hike for sure. Yeah. So now down in Frederick, what's keeping you busy down there? What's new for Seth?
Well, currently I'm a free agent coaching. I was coaching at Frederick Community College as an assistant, and they ended up our head coach resigned in the spring, and they ended up hiring somebody from outside of the staff at the beginning of September. And at that point, I decided that I would take a little bit of time off right now. So that's kind of what I'm doing. I'm still teaching high school social studies over at in Baltimore County at a high school called Owings Mills. This is my second year there, my third year teaching in Maryland overall. But, you know, what brought me out here was my then fiance, now wife, is she She was hired as the head Division I basketball coach at Mount St. Mary's for women's basketball. So this is her third year as well there, and she's getting better and better. And her season is underway after a couple games, and she's looking forward to building on what she's done there. So there's a lot of things going on, even though I'm not currently coaching. I'm trying to do some things as well, still coaching and staying involved. Our head coach took over one of the local high schools, so I'm going to be doing some of the stuff behind the scenes for him. I've been asked a couple different times to maybe do some lessons as far as baseball is concerned at a couple of facilities. And I picked up my personal training certification a couple months ago, so I may do some training with some clients and stuff this spring. So we'll see what happens.
That's fantastic. You know, that's something that I've kind of think that you and I have shared a long time is like we're sick with sports. I mean, it's almost a disease. Like no matter where we're at, what we're doing, we always gravitate towards sports, and we've got that in common. And it's, you know, you have a wealth of knowledge, a lot of experience. I mean, you're a successful athlete yourself, successful coach everywhere you've went. I don't know that. I mean, you're synonymous with breeding that winning culture. So the fact that you want to keep it, keep yourself competitive and keep yourself always wanting to be involved competitively, it doesn't surprise me. So I'm happy to hear that you're doing that. You and I, throughout the time, you were my coach as a young baseball player.
I was also a young coach.
Yes, definitely a young coach. I learned, like, I like to say that everybody I talked to with you, I've learned just immensely a lot about baseball, because I think that our area as a whole has taken a hit in baseball from you not being around, just because fundamentally you taught me so much, but also you taught me a lot as a person. That being said, it's funny, we get a chance to talk about this. When I was a sophomore in high school, I wanted to reference this exact incident just because it's something that I'll never forget. I, being a young catcher, a lot to develop by way of offensively, probably hitting 200, and that's generous. So,
I wasn't going to say anything.
Yep. The at-bats were coming sparingly. So that was something that was, you know, a problem for me. I'd never had a situation where I was being told, hey, you're going to have to take a back seat here. You're not going to get the at-bats. You're going to develop a little bit longer, and we'll see what's going. So I'm already frustrated. Do you recall we're in Roger City for a tournament? I bring my poor attitude out onto the field, and I get an error. You know, I have an error or two. And at this juncture, you call a mound visit because I'm moping a little bit, and we come to the, you know, we come to midfield there at the pitcher's mound, and you, in some polite words, let me know, you know, hey, we got to pick it up here. And I just remember going home that night so broken as a person, like, just called out, like, man, he's really going to let me know. He's going to let me have it. And, you know, all the boys were dogging me a little bit too. But, like, this specific incident, I laugh now looking back at, like, how hurt I was at the time. And, like, but that right there, just, like, you called me out. You drew attention to the fact that I needed to be better. And, like, that's just something, like, right there, like, that attitude, me being a young kid, you know, that was a learning lesson for me. But it's just something I look back at now, just, like, seeing how we are as people. That event, like, I was shaking like a little baby on the mound, like, hey, coach, yeah. Is mad. You know, I'm hardly making an impact out here because I'm not swinging it. But at the same time, you know, me moping on the field. So it's weird how these things progress. But, like, it's these little life lessons with you as a coach, like, you know, just make sure you're always involved, make sure you're doing well. And then, of course, I get the pat on the butt, you know, in the next few days, like, you're doing right. Okay. But
that's no, it's part of sales. If you don't know that already, you know, the positive negative positive. So I probably told you something positive before the game, and then I saw something I didn't like during the game. I can't tell you that I remember that specific event, but I will tell you that, you know, one of my problems as a coach as far as bringing somebody up that's, you know, not a freshman or sophomore as a varsity coach was I didn't want him to not play. And so that was maybe in your head, it was probably disappointing, but at the same time in my head, I'm thinking he's got to get some at-bats and try to develop here. And so I was probably thinking in my head too, that I was frustrated I wasn't doing that for you as well. But at the same time, I was trying to look out what was, you know, best for everybody at the time. And, you know, one of the things that I think you probably figured out real quick as a catcher is it's very clear when you're not, your attitude or your motivation isn't where it needs to be. And as opposed to maybe if you're playing the outfield or something like that, but, those life lessons obviously come from sports, as you said, and that's a pretty cool thing for you to remember. and obviously take forward with you. And, you know, I think those things, no matter where we're at in position, as far as what team we're on, and if you do have somebody that's holding you accountable, then that goes a long ways.
Oh, for sure. And that was, you know, that was my big come to Jesus moment on the field. Make sure, like, oh, hey.
That's pretty small compared to probably some others that might have some stories.
Oh, no. I absolutely think that I got off easy there. I mean, my feelings were hurt just because, like, we're out there and, like, we're called in front of everybody and stuff. You know, it was my pride, man. My pride.
That's okay. You know, like, I don't think that people realize that sometimes. It's okay to have your feelings hurt a little bit. Sometimes that growth happens because of that. And, you know, I think, you know, that's part of the millennial thing that people talk about these days with young athletes is, you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Well, and sometimes it has to happen for you to move forward and be better. And you know, I think as a coach, you can't be afraid to do that. And you know, I think we were probably a little bit closer because of men's league and seeing you over in Barton City and things like that than maybe some of the other athletes were. And I probably thought that I could do that with you, and I knew that you would respond to it, and you weren't just going to go into a shell. So,
right. And I do think that, like I said, you know, I did get a chance to grow from that. Is that something that you found in coaching now, even as opposed to, say, you know, 7-8 years ago? I mean, 10 years ago now, we're aging ourselves a little bit, but
we are
first getting your start.
You see this gray hair on the screen. You're not going to be able to hear it on the pod or see it on the podcast, but there's a lot more than there was 10 years ago.
Silver Fox, man. It's a good thing. It's experience. It's the look of experience.
Well, I would rather have it than no hair, I guess. So
but so do you find that, I mean, in this gap, this new era, I mean, because I think even looking for me, because I've done some coaching now with the kids, this new era of kids, this new wave is so despondent to criticism and so despondent to, you know, wanting to look in the mirror a little bit. And I was the same way, like with, you know, that situation I told you, but like kids don't want to have any criticism. They don't want any adversity. Is that a big hurdle for you as a coach today? Or
I just think you have to be a little more creative with your message. You know, it's just like any other time. You know, it's not going to be the same as it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Times change, people change, the way that we go about things in our society changes. And young people still need that accountability though. And then sometimes the message has to be a little bit different than maybe it was 5-10 years ago. And it is a challenge as a coach to try to figure out what the best way is. And you're not always successful with it, but you know, at the end of the day, all people need accountability, and especially young people. You know, the goal, I don't think I've ever coached a professional athlete, you know, from high school. And the goal at that level is obviously to kind of be able to form you to, you know, be a better man when at the end of the day, you know, you graduate high school and you do whatever it is you're going to be doing. And it's no different when I've been coaching in college. You know, a lot of these kids, you know, that I've coached, they think they're going to the NBA, but in all reality, they're probably not. And, you know, those lessons are going to go a lot further than, you know, talking to them about X's and O's, and you just have to pick your times. And like I said, I think the message is probably a little bit different than it was 10 years ago, but it's still there. And you have to hold people accountable to be successful, not only for them, but the group as a whole. And it's a necessity to have a successful program and a team.
I think that's one thing that I take away from our time spent together. Obviously, that's when I say that this area in particular has taken a hit, is that I really felt that, yes, you were concerned about the fact that, hey, you're slugging maybe sub 100, but at the end of the day, you're thinking too, you know, what are you going to do when you wake up in 5 years? Like, who are you going to be? So that's something that I think, you know, we have great people around the area still as well, but I that's one thing that I'll testify for you that I'm happy that we have. You know, you check in on me, you make sure that, you know, things are all right. You want to be a part of these podcasts and these things like that. So it's just good to see that, you know, the coaching aspect of your brain is wired to think like, how can I develop this person as opposed to anything else? And whether that's in the new age, the kids, you know, the kids and their technology of today, the millennials or of 10 years ago, you were consistent with that as well. So,
well, I think, you know, I was fortunate enough to, as a young person, have coaches and people in my life that did the same thing. And at the end of the day, it probably comes from my family as much as anything, but, you know, I'm a firm believer that a lot of times you coach and you teach and you live your life how you were coached and taught, you know, along the way. And if I'm doing it the right way. Hopefully, you know, that's something that you and everybody else that I coached and taught will carry on. And it's not always going to be perfect, you know, but it, at the end of the day, I mean, that's the bigger goal. I mean, we all want to win and everybody wants to win and you know, do the things on the field and things like that. But, you know, those things are a lot more meaningful.
For sure. And so you're coaching these days, you know, sparingly, you're working free agency, but you staying fresh. You still playing a little bit. I see on your Instagram and all that you're still, you know,
believe it or not, I'm probably playing more now than I did when you knew me. So actually, I know I am because up there it was only on Sundays and then maybe occasional trip downstate. But I just keep track on my little notes on my phone and of the amount of games that I play just out of curiosity. And I hit 64 games this year.
So 64 games. So does that mean that you're hovering right around 40 home runs, 50?
Well, no. It's all wood bat. So, you know.
So only, you know.
A little more difficult than Barton City. Swing what you can, whatever you want, type baseball. But
are you?
And we might see a little bit better pitching than we did in Barton City, too. I'm not sure about that, but, you know.
So are you seeing the velo? I mean, are you seeing high stuff? Is it back
to
that?
I mean, it depends on, like, the league around here that I play in, which in the summertime is 18-plus. We occasionally see, you know, pretty good pitching mid to high 80s. But for the most part, it's probably low 80s. But, you know, I go to tournaments, which is where those games kind of stack up on because you play four or five games in a weekend or whatever. And then I also go to Florida at the end of October. I've done that the last 5 years where I play 9 or 10 games against competition that are – there's a lot of ex-pros and stuff down there, and they have tournaments that are – basically all ages, but the ones I've been going to are 35 plus. And this year, I swear, every single game we saw somebody that was mid to high 80s that had just ridiculous off-speed stuff. It was the best pitching that I had seen consistently in a week-long period probably since college. So they're still out there, and the challenge is definitely still there, and it doesn't get any easier as you get older.
To say 35 plus, you know, you could have just, nobody at home, I mean, my audience isn't booming yet. Nobody knows. You could have said you're in the 27, 28 age bracket, you know.
Yeah, well, I think you already dated me when you were talking about how many years ago it was that I coached you. I mean, nobody's going to believe that I'm 27 when you say that I coached you 10 years ago, so.
Well, we could have just let them know, hey, you're in such physical pristine condition still. They had to bump you down into the horse
bracket. Well, I do. You know? I will take a little pat myself on the back a little bit. That's the only way that I can compete as much as I do is because I do try to keep myself in good shape and I do work out a lot, but I see guys that don't, and they still compete at a high level. And I don't, there's no way that I could do that. I don't think so.
There are some guys from our county league that we both are aware. I don't know where the skill came from, how their body responded, but they didn't keep themselves in
guys,
you know,
that we played with.
That's I didn't want to say it.
Perhaps somebody I coached with.
Yes, absolutely. Phenomenal. One of the best hitters in the whole world. But hey, so the state of your coaching, you know, free agency, the state of your playing, you're still a high athlete. Now the state of your watching. I know you're a big Cubs fan. Huge. Lot of turnover this year. Joe Maddon going to be gone. What are you thinking? How's it going to happen?
I honestly think that I enjoy the hot stove as much as I do the actual season, but it's the last couple of years have been kind of disappointing as long as it's taken for free agents to sign and a lot of slowness going on in these early months. But I think this year's gonna be a little different. I don't know if you saw just a little bit ago, Braves signed Will Smith as a reliever. So I think there's gonna be different signings like that. As far as the Cubs are concerned, you know, I love Joe Maddon. I do think it was probably time to separate. You know, everybody seemed to agree on that. I sometimes think the grass isn't always greener on the other side, but we'll see. You know, I think, you know, Rossi's a good fit, but it totally depends on what they do with, you know, the roster, because it doesn't matter at that level necessarily who the manager is as far as a ton of difference in wins and losses. I mean, most of it has to do with talent at that level.
Yeah. As to the Cubs in particular, would you have a problem with, say, so we're talking about guys we played with. So in men's league, obviously you are managed by someone who's your friend. So if, say, our good friend John Klinger, who was our coach as well, if he had to have the difficult conversation with you, says, Seth, you're playing poorly, I'm going to move you to 8 or 9. You know, this is
basically... I actually think that's a pretty good comparison to Rossi, don't you? I mean, the listeners, I don't know how many of them are going to know of Coach Klinger, but he was never afraid to have that difficult conversation, no matter who you were. And
he gave it to you good.
We may be great friends off the field, but he's going to tell you what he thinks on it. So I think Rossi's the same way. Somebody like Rizzo, who's probably one of his best buds off the field, he's not going to have a difficult time telling him if he's playing terrible on it or doing something mentally that he should be doing better or whatever. I mean, I do think that Rossi would be a good fit in that. My only concern with Rossi is his inexperience in the dugout as far as making decisions. Because for me, for my money, the managers in baseball, I think their biggest judgment is how they deal with the bullpen. And a lot of times, you know, first year, second year managers with no experience, they have a difficult time with that. Gabe Kapler is a perfect example. Like, you know, if you screw up a couple decisions with the bullpen, then that can be lasting for a week straight where you're struggling to pick up wins because you got guys pitching out of place or they don't have rest like they should be or whatever. So we'll see how he does with that. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that really knows how that's going to play out. But I think the personal part with the players is going to be fine. I don't have much concern with that.
And I think, too, that he'll probably have a nice leash, and especially with the fans, you know, because he's adhered himself to the fan base so much. He's, you know, he's loved so eternally in Chicago. So he's going to have a little bit longer rope to maybe learn on the fly if he does make some mistakes. So it'll be interesting to see how the Cubs shake out for sure. This last year, the Nationals win the World Series. You're a local, so a local squad winning it for you. Do you have any, I mean, you got to put your Cubs hat away for a minute. Is there any perennial favorite you're going to have for next year looking ahead? I mean, I know it's so early. We've got all the offseason stuff to go yet, but is there any team that you think this DNA, this offseason track record, they got some money to spend, you know, anything like that?
Well, first of all, the Nationals were, they were really fun to follow out here. I mean, anywhere. I mean, it wouldn't matter where I live, but I just thought they played the right way and they were fun to watch. And you know, the last few years, especially in the playoffs, including the year the Cubs won 16, the bullpens came into those games so early where starters were coming out in like the third, fourth inning, even if they were pitching well. And, you know, the Brewers still do that. But like the Nationals, the Astros, especially those teams had dominant starters that were going deep into games. So it was kind of cool to see that old school approach still. And the Nationals had some, you know, exciting young stars too that played for them. And so that was fun to watch, and they kind of had that never say die attitude that they carried on all elimination games. They continued to win. I guess, I don't know, this year, I don't think the Nationals are going to be repeating. We'll see what happens, but they kind of got hot at the right time. And I don't know that they're going to be able to sign Strasburg and Rendon. I think they'll probably sign one of them, but I don't know about both.
Yeah, especially because today in baseball, all the teams and like the competitive balance, like they don't want to spend as much. I agree with you that it was refreshing to see baseball played the same way, because like you look at the teams like the Rays, the Brewers that employ this bullpenning strategy so often, and baseball, we know it's the game that we probably both love the most. It's already a slower paced game. So like as for watchability, it's really nice to see that, you know, you get two horses go at each other and actually.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say is like. You know, I don't care how much you love baseball. Nobody wants to have to, you know, get up, get something to eat, go to the bathroom 27 times because they're taking out pitchers that many times. You know what I mean? It's just, it makes the game drag on. And I think that's probably the biggest change as far as making the game go faster. The pace of play that they keep trying to do is if they do initiate that three batter rule for the bullpen guys, I mean, I think that'll make a pretty big difference. And I might change some of the jobs of those guys, but man, it makes it a lot more watchable for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that, as the old song goes, too much of a good thing is a good thing, but I don't know. I don't know, man. Like, I love baseball. I'm a purist. I'll watch it till I get blue in the face, but I also just like to see guys who dominate. Like, you see these Max Scherzer types, you know, the Strasburg, just guys who can go out there and get three outs and, you know, are competitive, because I'm sorry, I want to see Strasburg face Cody Bellinger. I want to see the righty on lefty. I don't need to see the specialist every time just because – you know, like, show me, like, give me your best guy and put him up against your best guy. You know, that's just how I like to see the sports play out. So
and it's cool to see those guys deep in the games, like, just kind of pull from deep within to see what they got left and face those, you know, good hitters and still be successful in the seventh or eighth inning.
Yeah, I mean, it's 2019 and we got, you know, starters going deeper and also that's great. But, I mean, shoot, with guys like, it's unheard of. And Max Scherzer 2 days ago couldn't even wipe his butt because his neck hurts so bad. And he's going to go out there and throw. So it was just this.
Literally couldn't put on his own shirt.
That's yeah. And he's coming out there and, you know, throw. He think he got into the sixth inning of that World Series game. I mean, just really impressive. It's just like throwback baseball. And we're throwing it back to 2 years ago, which just shows how rapidly this this game's changing. It's absurd. So as well, for 29,
I'm going to turn the tables a little bit on you here, because, you know, you got to be, as a Tigers fan, you got to be a little bit, and I know you like the Blue Jays, but, you know, hometown Tigers, Scherzer, you have David Price, you have Sanchez, you have Verlander, and Porcello were all on the same staff literally 5 or 6 years ago in Detroit, and now those guys are all winning rings.
You know, okay, yes, those starters, while impressive, I just want to say this. Probably the Tiger pitcher that was most astounding to me that got a World Series, a little under the radar, Fernando Rodney. Talk about a guy that deserves it. I mean, to the tune of a 5 ERA in the bullpen for the last, you know, 6 years. I don't know how he hung on, but everybody talks about, because in Detroit, it breaks my heart over and over again, people say these starting pitchers winning the World Series. I say, you know, I'll turn the conversation. Yeah, but Rodney got one. So, you know, it's not always, and it's so weird with baseball, because like these guys, it just takes a team being hot, you know, and I think that's with any sport. I mean, but you have those aces on a staff that, you know, 5 Cy Young guys, and they didn't win a World Series. And I liken that to my senior year. You weren't around for baseball, but we had a senior year baseball team. We're 28-3, and we have our horse on the mound. No, we didn't actually start Cody that game. Shout out Cody Franklin, you know, big time 90 mile an hour guy. But just baseball is so weird like that. You know, any given day, a team can go out, you know, you can't hit a curveball. I mean, I could never do that anyways. So, but just
it's
things
not
are
the
different.
Easiest thing to do in the world. It takes a lot of time to figure that out. That's funny you say that, because, you know, this was just before your time, but when the first district championship we won would have been in 09. So what grade were you in at that point?
Oh, I would have been an eighth grader at that time.
Yeah. So that was my second year coaching baseball at Alcona. And we were going into districts below 500. We were 17-19 going into districts. And we ended up winning the districts and the regionals and losing in the quarterfinals and the final 8. We got hot at the right time. We had 2 pitchers, Wade Oliver and Jason Deller, who they dealt, man. They got out there and they shoved, and then we had a defense that also got hot. We didn't make an error in 4 games in the districts and regionals, and like we walked like 1 guy. And so we were definitely not the most talented team, and probably either district or regional, and we won both. And I think you can kind of compare that to what you're talking about, is, you know, baseball is a game where you just got to get hot at the right time, and all of a sudden – it's a contagious thing too, because if somebody is playing well or hitting well, then all of a sudden somebody else does, and then it just trickles on down. And that's what's one of the, you know, the most fun things I think about baseball is that team atmosphere, that all of a sudden everybody's playing well because somebody else is, you know what I mean? So.
Oh, for sure. And that's like with the pro teams, with anything else, you know, that's like when we talk about which team's going to be the front runner next year, like, okay, the Yankees, can they sign Garrett Cole? Where does Garrett Cole go? I think a lot of that matters, but at the same time, who's hot at the right time? How's the clubhouse morale? Like, how do the guys gel together? There's just so much that factors into that. So it is really hard to predict, but I'm going to stamp it. You know, I'm just going to throw it out there right now, just for a shot in the dark.
You got one. You're going to say one. I can feel it.
I'm going to do it, just because I think the Yankees are going to get over the hump. I think.
Oh, yeah?
Only because, like, they won 103 games with none of their big guys there. They're going to have money to spend. I think that'll be there. With these big moments, I want to come back a little bit to your time as a coach on that deep run team. Is it more – I haven't had this, you know, experience. Is it more stressful as a player in these big situations, or as a coach where you can't make an impact as much? Like, how do you
– It's not even close. It's as a coach.
Really?
Yeah, because you don't have the control that you feel like you do when you're playing. You know, as a senior in high school, my team won the state championship. It was the only state championship as a team that's ever happened at Quincy High School in any sport. And, again, we probably shouldn't have been where we were at. We had a lot of things happen that just fell into place for us. We got guys that got hot. We, again, pitched and played great defense, and just everything just happened right at the right time for us. But I mean, I remember as an 18-year-old pitcher, like, not feeling the pressure as much as when I was coaching. Not like pressure, I don't know if that's the right word for it, but anxiousness is probably a better word. Like I'm sitting there calling signs for pitches for Wade and Jason in those situations, and I'm like, I think this is the right call. You know, I hope he's going to make the right pitch here and he's going to execute it. And you have a good feeling, but like you don't have control over it. You know, they're the ones that are actually doing the motion. So it's a little bit different. And actually it's a lot different, you know, from playing to coaching as far as that is concerned. But at the same time, I don't know. I think it's actually probably more gratifying as a coach because you see those guys that are succeeding in those pressure moments and you know that that's such a big deal in life. And, you know, we talked about that earlier and, you know, because you're going to be put in spots in life that are tough and how you respond to those and how resilient you are from those is a lot of times directed back to how you responded when you were young. And if you're successful in those moments and you can kind of draw back on that. And that's a pretty cool thing as a coach to see that.
Yeah. Being a coach has got to be like being a prisoner of the moment. I mean, I remember how tense you guys would get about like even, or liken back to John Klinger in men's league.
Just getting ready to say that. I'll never forget. I look over in the middle of the regional game. We're in the seventh inning and, you know, those of us that know Coach Klinger a little bit, he's over there dry heaving in the dugout as you know, trying to get the last couple outs. And I looked over and it actually kept me loose because I just started laughing. I was like, what are you doing, man? Like,
oh, but and that's a two-headed monster because, yes, there's the side of him that's so passionate about winning. But I've been on the side where we make the wrong call during the game, you know, especially against his better judgment. If you remember Cody and I against Hubbard Lake in men's league playoffs when we defied him and I saw your helmet come across the dugout and he's just,
you'll have just that.
Just so much intensity from that guy. But yeah, baseball, man, baseball brings out some tense moments, especially because there's a little bit slower pace and so much hinges on each moment. And we spent a lot of time on the diamond here with a lot of, but that's where most of our background together is, but just branching off a little bit, you know, we have the NFL, I mean, hot and right in the middle of it right now. Do you spend a lot of time watching NFL football? Do you have a front runner for MVP, a team that you think might go, you know, all the way there this year?
Well, man, it's been a rough couple of years being a Broncos fan. So I've been watching, but it's been difficult to follow some of it. You know, I do play fantasy, so I try to keep track of my guys and watch games as best I can. You know, Lamar Jackson right now over here with the Ravens is, I would say he's a front runner for the MVP. I mean, if he continues what he's doing, like I said last year, I work with a lot of Ravens fans here, you know, outside of Baltimore. And actually my supervisor, my department chair, he's a huge Ravens fan, has season tickets. And last year when Jackson played, he couldn't throw the ball. And we talked about that a lot. And all of a sudden he's coming in this year and he's slinging it all over the field. I'm like, what happened? How did that doesn't make any sense to me. He's had an amazing season.
His progression is just insane. I mean, the leap he's made, and they've tailored the offense to be like pseudo quarterback. Like he's so impressive. I mean, he runs around like everybody wants to say Mike Vick. Yeah, I don't know that Mike Vick ever threw the ball like he's throwing this year.
I would agree with that. Yeah. I mean, he's and I also, for my money, would say that John Harbaugh is the best Harbaugh as far as coaches are concerned.
Ooh.
It's not close to me. You just said that he tailored the offense. Like he's done things with guys, you know, he won a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer as a quarterback. So, you know, he's done some things with some under-talented players that I don't think other guys would have. And I think you might look at down the road there at Michigan and see that right now that, you know, they have all these five-star recruits and some of those big games they're struggling with a little bit.
So I have not a very big audience, but the audience that we have, you've officially alienated half of them because
Robbie? I know the Michigan side there, so.
Oh, Robbie's going to be. Robbie is already. I mean, we've already heartbroken Rob because he was phased out of this episode. He's, you know, this is his first departure. Oh, I know, but he's a busy guy. But now, on top of that, we've just got Robbie a Harbaugh diss. Oh, I mean, shoot.
No, I shouldn't. This because I actually do like Jim Harbaugh, even though he's a little bit strange in my eyes. I think he's a good coach, but I do think John is a better coach. Let me phrase it that way. I think John is the best coach in the family, and including his brother-in-law Tom Crean, who I'm a, you know, huge Indiana basketball fan. So I'm John over all of those guys.
So okay, right on. So are you going Crean, then John, then khakis. So you're going to go 1, 2, 3 that way?
I'm going John, Jim, Crean. Crean's, I think he's a very nice man that doesn't always equal great coach.
Yeah, okay. I can say I've met a few that way as well. Absolutely. Okay, so with, you know, the talk about Lamar Jackson, is the Ravens somebody that you think is going to jump out in front? Or do you think maybe, you know, the Patriots keep running it back? The 49ers have looked good this year. Anybody really that?
Yeah, I like Jimmy G out west too. I would not bet against the Patriots until maybe Tom Brady's collecting on his ARP card. Not sure that that's a safe bet until somebody actually dethrones them for more than a year. You know, I do think that there's, you know, the Patriots record is probably a little bit skewed because that division is just not good overall. But
yeah, when you get to beat up on the Dolphins, the Jets, and not really the Bills this year. I mean, the Bills are
well, that's a prime example of it. The Bills are better, but they're not as good as their record either, I don't think.
No.
I saw you pick the Redskins to beat them a couple weeks ago.
I did, and it broke my heart because the Bills throw – I want to go to Buffalo so bad just to be a part of a pregame, you know, over the Bills. Like, if somebody could throw me through a flaming table just because my football team's playing on Sunday, like, that's crazy. Those guys party like there's no tomorrow.
It is what you want it to be. You can probably find that anywhere if you really want it. So I don't know if you have to go to Buffalo for that, but Buffalo is probably one of the prime locations. You could go to Cleveland, definitely, and check out that. I'm sure it's happening.
You know, I'm pretty sure.
You might want to go to Oakland before they move to Vegas, too.
So. That's true. I've seen some wild stuff happen on the dugouts in Barton City before some of the men's league games, too.
I don't think we should take credit for that. There was a lot of stuff going on around us a lot of times, too.
No, I'm in a distance. I don't want to claim any responsibility for what was going on, but.
This is where the accountability part goes to someone else.
Okay, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was a part of the fun, but not responsible for the actions. No way. So last league, we'll cover one more just because for the sake, we like to touch all three major ones each podcast episode. NBA, you're a basketball guy. I know you are. You coach it. You're a phenomenal coach of it. You always did well here. Do you have a pro team? Do you keep tabs on the pros?
Still a Pistons guy. I thought last year they were at least on the right track with some things, and I do think that Dwayne Casey's a pretty good coach, but they've kind of hamstrung themselves with some of their contracts, and we'll see what happens. They haven't played very well this year, but Blake's been hurt for most of it so far, and I think once they get him back, they can compete with most of the better teams in the East. But LeBron's doing his thing out west with the Lakers, and they look pretty tough, and the Warriors are in shambles, so. I think there's probably going to be a change of the guard out there. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Clippers look really good with Kawhi, and they don't even have PG yet. So those things are happening. Going back to what you said about, you know, coaching basketball and kind of comparing it to baseball, like we talked about baseball, and we love baseball. It's a great sport. One of the reasons why I love basketball is because it's so much faster, though. And, you know, baseball, we could always kind of think about our decisions and even a couple ahead of time. In basketball, you have to really think on your feet and adjust fast in the game and make those adjustments that you think are best and make them more instinctively. And so that's one of the things I love. And, you know, that's actually why I like college basketball better than the NBA, because it's a lot more like that.
See, you say fast, and that's almost like hieroglyphics to me. You're speaking in written language, just because that's not a part of my DNA. I know that you spend a lot more time with basketball, and like that's where your bread is buttered. You're really good with that.
It wasn't always though. I think that honestly, when I first started, I was probably a lot better baseball coach than I was basketball, and it's taken a lot of time as far as studying the game and getting better at the end game stuff and the X's and O's, because it wasn't something that came completely natural to me, and that's probably one of the reasons why I loved it, because it was such a challenge for me to get better at it. And I wasn't too cocky to think that I knew everything and that I was willing to get better. You know, even when I was at Conan, we had a lot of success. I mean, I had a lot of talent that I coached there than compared to a lot of years that maybe they've had before. But I knew that I didn't know as much as I needed to as far as on the court. I mean, you don't think you never do, but at the same time, I knew that X's and O's were definitely my weakness. And so I just I felt like that was something that I could get better at, you know, like that's something you have control over to try to learn and get better at. So when I watch games now, it's a lot slower for me than it probably was 10 years ago when I was up there. And that just comes with experience and being willing to learn, in my opinion.
My lack of experience with basketball, it's pretty well known. I never had a chance to play at all. You as a coach, something that, you know, really interests me because I never had this dynamic with you as my coach. With basketball, a lot of it is getting guys, I think, to check their ego at the door. Because in baseball, when one player performs well, the whole team performs well, just because, like, we all got to score runs. With basketball, you can win, but you can win in a way that doesn't reflect very well on yourself. You know, like, if a guy's not getting the touches at all, is there a lot more micromanaging as a coach? Do you have to, you know, check in on your guys a lot more to make sure, like, hey, he's touching the ball, we're moving the ball a certain way, or he's more efficient? Like, how do you check that?
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair to say. Probably a little more maintenance with guys. But I also think that, you know, just like baseball, kind of defining roles is a huge thing early on with the team. And a lot of times guys don't have a true understanding of what they're really good at and what they're not. And, you know, that's my responsibility as a coach a lot of times to make that very clear. I saw a quote from Kelvin Sampson, which, you know, a lot of people have different opinions about Kelvin Sampson as a coach because of some of his past things with the NCAA, but I think as a basketball coach, he's a really, really good coach. And one of the things he said recently was about his team is, you know, everybody wants to tell not very good shooters, you know, and try to give them more confidence. He goes, I don't want to give my bad shooters more confidence. He's like, I want to make sure they know that they're not good shooters, so they don't shoot the ball as much as my good shooters. And that made a lot of sense to me. And that's something like kind of you're talking about is, you know, guys, I'm not getting enough touches. Well, there's probably a reason for that. Like there, you know, there's guys that we want to get more touches than you, and making guys understand that as far as what their roles are and really buying into it is definitely a challenge and a process. And it does take a lot of time.
I like that you're cognizant of the fact, like me as a coach or as a player for a coach like yourself, like I want to know what my role is. Like, I don't want to be the round peg trying to fit a square hole or vice versa, you know, like, tell me what I need to do and like, how are we going to be successful as a unit? And I think that being forthcoming about that and just making sure, like, you know, that's important just because that way I don't have a false sense of security, you know, like I'm going to be getting X amount of touches or I need this or that. Just like, I like that the fact that you're saying like, this is what you need to do to make it that our team's successful. And you've always been honest, you know, with me, at least as a player, like this is what we need to do. And I think that more coaches should probably do that and like define that role. So that way, like you're saying, you're not chasing like, well, I need to be doing this, or this is what I think I need. Like, this is the expectation of you.
As a player, I mean, I wanted my coach to be honest with me. If he saw something differently than I did, I mean, he's got to be making his decisions for a reason. Just tell me. Okay. I can accept the truth a lot more than I can if you sugarcoat it or tell me something that isn't necessarily true. I think that's huge for defining those roles. And just being honest with guys, you know, at Alcona, I probably that was one of my strengths for sure, but I think I definitely got a lot better at that after there. I worked under a coach for a couple of years at the college level when I left Alcona at Henry Ford Community College, and then he took the job at Schoolcraft College, and I was his assistant at both places. And he was a phenomenal people person. Like, his guys just absolutely loved him. They'd run through a brick wall. And similar to what I'm saying earlier, like, he probably wasn't just an outstanding X's and O's coach, but he did really, really well because he built those relationships with the guys, and like, they knew exactly what their roles were. And he would be brutally honest sometimes to the point where they hated him for like 5 seconds, but they would get over it because he was truthful about what he wanted and what they could do and what they couldn't do. And I just think that's a huge part of in a dynamic of, you know, both the individual and the team when you're coaching. And it goes a long ways. And you know, what you're saying with basketball is like, if you got guys that don't know their roles and they're trying to do things they can't, then you're just not going to be very good regardless how much talent you have.
Absolutely. And like, we often hear the term player's coach. And I think that you are a player's coach in terms of the fact that like, you maintain a good relationship with guys, but you're not going to pacify me either. So you're a realistic coach on top of being a player's coach. I think that you mix very well with that. Like, you can keep the relationships well on top of the fact that, yes, you're just going to, it's cut and dry. Here it is. With that said, your coaching style, this is kind of one of the last few things I want to touch on with you. Your coaching style, what is your ideal player? I'm not talking about your archetype, like a 6'7" wing player. I'm talking about what type of person are you looking for? And what maybe do you not like in an athlete? Like adherence to rules, things like that, you know, tardiness, stuff like that. What qualities are you want in an athlete? What can you coach? And then what deters you as a coach?
A lot of tough questions there, Chad.
I try to get pretty introspective, man. You know, we're deep on this one. We're deep.
Yeah, I see that. I think that philosophy really hasn't changed a whole lot over time. You know, if you remember as a player, some of my basic rules were number one, to be on time, number two, to be coachable, and number three, which I developed even, you know, in a different level over time, was to be a great teammate. And I think that goes a long ways. You know, you said at the beginning, like, as a basketball coach, sure, you know, everybody wants a 6'7" wing that can handle the ball and do everything on the floor talent wise. And, you know, as a coach, you can't win without talent. You have to have a certain amount of talent to be successful. But for me, that number three there that I said, being a great teammate, covers just about everything. If somebody is a great teammate, they're going to be on time. They're going to be respectful. They're going to be coachable. They're going to be honest. They're going to be somebody that, you know, you can rely on as a teammate or a coach. And I think that's the biggest thing in any team sport is to be a great teammate. And I think if you do that and you see what that falls under, it's just like, you know, when I'm in the classroom and I tell my kids, I don't have a lot of rules in my classroom. My number one rule is to be respectful. And because I think that covers a ton of area. And if you do that and you're a great teammate, then, you know, a lot of those things that, that you expect as a coach will fall into place. And for me, you know, for my money, the young athletes that I have, if they're a great teammate, they're going to get a lot more out of it. And they might not see it at first. But you said that, you know, when you came out to the mound there and you were pouting a little bit or whatever, you know, I think probably if it wasn't right then after the game or whatever, you might have saw shortly after that, that you weren't having a good experience either. And if you were, you know, a great teammate and you weren't acting like that, then you would also have a really good experience, not only for your teammates, but you.
Absolutely. And like after that one specific event, I mean, because I'm, you know, a young kid as it is, I'm maybe 14 years old playing varsity baseball. Like I needed to have that, you know, that awakening moment. Like, okay, you may not be impacting the game, like in this particular situation, you know, with
the
your
thing is you were, you just didn't know it.
Exactly. So like my attitude as a teammate, my morale, I'm bringing down the team, and like you enlighten me on that. Like your attitude is so contagious in team environments. And if you're creating better people, and as you were making sure that I was going to be a better person, a better teammate, that ultimately we're going to have more success, because no one wants to be around the moping guy. Nobody wants to be around the bad teammate. So you're creating a culture. And I think that Seth Coffin coach teams have that culture that, you know, we're going to do this together and we're going to do it the right way too. And I've never been a part of a team that you coach where that wasn't, you know, that wasn't how it was.
I appreciate that. I take a lot of pride in that. And I think, you know, like I said, it goes a long ways, not just on the field or the court.
Yeah. And I think it speaks volumes too. You checking back in with your players, like, you know, take the opportunity to come back onto this podcast, which, by the way, you are the first guest on a podcast that has grossed $1.22 off of monetization.
Wow.
So,
what does that even mean?
Well, you know, we monetize, we get a few ads on here. I actually, you know, there'll be the ad before this plays that, you know, promoting Anchor, the platform I'll release through, and then a nice little intro for you. We're making big bucks. So, I mean,
see that. Yeah.
So be looking, you know, maybe for a stipend.
$2, we're on the right track.
If it gets to $2, you know, by the end of this podcast, I might have to send you some sort of residual fee or not fee.
I'll just tell you that I'm doing this out of the goodness of my heart, and I'm not looking for monetary gains. So
look at just
regardless of how high that dollar figure is, I want it to go in your pocket.
See, a gentleman and a scholar, one last thing. I'm a big pop culture guy here. What I got to know, what's your favorite all time movie? It can be a sports movie, a comedy. You just hit me with your favorite one.
Major League. There's just so many lines in that movie that you can carry on regardless of age on the baseball field or you know, and if you have a baseball buddy that follows it and knows that movie, then they know exactly what you're talking about whenever you say a line from that movie. And it's, you know, got a lot of good humor in it, a lot of quality adult humor, and I've always thought that was probably my favorite movie. When I was about you know, my late teens, I think, was probably around the time it came out. I watched that movie so many times. I knew basically front to back exactly every line. And I don't know it as well as I did then, but I can still tell you some pretty good lines. I can't probably tell you on this podcast, but I could tell you off the air.
Yeah. We got to try to keep it PG. We're not trying to get the R label slapped on us too hard. But is there anything else, you know, that you'd like to plug? Anything, you know, anything coming up for you that you'd like to bring to attention?
Not right now. I mean, I would be happy to be a guest again and see if we can gross a couple more dollars for you on the podcast. So, you know, you let me know when you're free and I can make it work. You know, it's not quite Northern Michigan out here in Maryland as far as the weather goes. So I know you get a little bit stooped up inside, and if I can help your boredom a little bit by creating another podcast anytime, you just let me know.
Absolutely. This seasonal depression up here is no joke, man. Goodness gracious.
Actually, I have no desire to move back there, and it's not because of the people. I just don't want to live in that weather anymore. So,
I haven't seen the sun in days. It's miserable. Yep. But absolutely, thank you so much for coming, taking the time out, checking back in. We'll have to get you back on here with Rob again so you guys can settle your feud about Harbaugh, settle some things up too. We're just, you know, happy to share some thoughts. And again, thank you very much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Chad.
Yep, no problem. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that look into my relationship with my first coach, that you enjoyed a little bit of talk about coaching, what entails, look into his life, look into mine, and, you know, just a little referendum back on to the leagues again. I know that it's been a while, and we're going to try to make it a little bit more prevalent. Me and Rob both had a lot of stuff going on. He's out of his coaching gig now, so... got a little bit more time on our hands, so hopefully we'll get back to it. Thank you for listening. You can subscribe, you know, Apple Podcasts, all the other ones as well. So just keep hanging in there with us. Hope you enjoyed the content, and we'll be back here again. Thank you very much.